This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In the midst of a hotly contested election season comes word from the New Hampshire State House that no fewer than 8 incumbent state senators will forego re-election bids this fall. While some are leaving to seek other offices, others are simply stepping away from the legislative chamber. While this level of turnout is not unprecedented, 8 senators left in 2012, it has raised the intriguing question of which party will control the state Senate in 2017 and beyond. We'll talk with 4 of those retiring state senators, David Booten, Molly Kelly, David Pierce, and Nancy Stiles, in order to get their perspective on New Hampshire state government. We'll also touch on their greatest achievements and disappointments while in office and discuss what they believe the future holds for the institutions of New Hampshire government. Today on The Exchange, it's a state Senate send-off. Let's hear from you. You can call into The Exchange at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange, all one word. And I have 4 senators joining me in studio for the show this morning. David Booten is a Republican senator from Hooksett who's been in the state Senate for 7 years. He previously served 4 terms in the state House of Representatives. And Senator Booten, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you very much, Dean. It's a pleasure to be here.
Molly Kelly is a 5-term Democratic senator from Keene. Senator Kelly, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
And David Pierce is a 2-term Democratic senator from Lebanon. He previously served 3 terms in the House of Representatives. And Senator Pierce, welcome to The Exchange.
Well, thanks for having me.
Finally, Nancy Stiles is a 3-term Republican senator from Hampton. She previously served 3 terms in the House of Representatives. And Senator Stiles, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Dean.
So we appreciate you all being here. This should be a very interesting and enjoyable roundtable discussion. Now that you're all stepping away from the chamber, I know I hesitate to use the word retire because you're all going to go on to do other things. We hope you really will give us the inside scoop on what goes on in the Senate chamber. And let me begin by asking each of you a very basic question. We'll go right around the table, and I'll start with you, Senator Pierce. Why have you decided to leave the state Senate, and why now during a big presidential election year?
Thanks, Dean. Well, I've served 3 terms in the House, 2 terms in the Senate. 10 years in the legislature, I think, is a good cap. It's time for somebody else to represent the district. And plus, just on a personal note, just, you know, changes in my family situation where I'm moving out of the district.
Mm-hmm. Senator Booten?
It's a good question, Dean. And my answer is simply this. I have spent nearly 30 years in public service in one form or another, whether it's at the local level or here in Concord at the state level. And I just felt and I also have a new granddaughter coming in mid-July. And so I felt that it was time for me to pass the torch on, give somebody else. It's not my seat. It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the people in District 16. So let someone else do it for a while. And I know we refer to it as retiring from the state Senate, and while I am retiring from the state Senate, I'm not retiring from politics, and I will stay engaged in that way. But I feel like I'm leaving at the top of my game, and that's a good feeling to have.
Senator Stiles.
Thank you. Well, it has been 12 years, and I appreciate the opportunity to have represented my district both before and after redistricting. But it was a tough decision to make, but there were some personal things going on in my life that kind of forced me to make that change.
Time to move on. Yeah, Senator Kelly.
Yes, thank you. I think you've heard from others as well that it's a very difficult decision to make, Dean, and I certainly gave it a lot of thought, and have to say just to begin that it truly has been an honor and a privilege to serve the people of my district and to work with so many incredible other legislators in the process. I am taking all of my same beliefs and values that I've had in the Senate and moving into new avenues with new opportunities and new challenges, and plan to stay very active in politics and certainly not closing the door to any future possibilities as well as an elected official.
Mm-hmm. And we should point out to listeners that the job of state senator is not a salaried position. I think you get $100 and car mileage. Is that correct?
Correct.
That's about right. So you have other lives in addition to doing this. Let's talk a little bit about the state senate itself, and just give our listeners a sense of what the chamber is like. We know there are only 24 of you, so it's very small in comparison to the House. But just how would you describe the state senate to somebody from another state? And let me start with you, Senator Booten.
Well, it's a unique institution. There's only 24 of us. And if your philosophy is that you want to help people in your district and in the state, there is a wonderful opportunity to work in a bipartisan way. We get to serve on several committees. We get to work closely together. We help sponsor each other's bills. And I found that if you wanted to get things done, you can get things done. And lastly, I would say I think one of the things that's unique about the Senate is we're the Senate, the state Senate in New Hampshire here is the saucer that cools the hot tea that comes from the House. We're a small group. We talk to each other frequently, and we take these issues very seriously, and we dissect them, and sometimes we come up with some policy solutions that are a little different from the House. But those are important features of serving in the state Senate. You're working with a small group of people, and you really get to know each other, and so it's been a unique experience to work with all my colleagues here in the room today and all the others that I've served with over the years.
So, Senator Pierce, it sounds like much like the U.S. Senate, the state Senate is sort of a body that kind of slows things down, calms things down a little bit. Your sense of the sort of the atmosphere and the collegiality of the body?
Absolutely. That was the starkest contrast that I experienced in moving from the House into the Senate is – the collegiality, the civility, the respect that the members have for each other, and building relationships. Because it is such a smaller body than the House, which has 400 members, it's much easier and, in fact, required to interact with your colleagues and try to find solutions. And it's easy to find bipartisan solutions a lot of the time.
I want to let our listeners know we're having a roundtable discussion with four New Hampshire state senators who are leaving office this term. David Booten, Republican senator from Hooksett. David Pierce, a Democratic senator from Lebanon. Nancy Stiles, a Republican senator from Hampton. And Molly Kelly, a Democratic senator from Keene. And you can call in and join the conversation at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Maybe you have some parting questions that you would like to ask your state senators. And Senator Stiles, let me turn to you and ask you to give our listeners a sense of just what is the workload like for a typical state senator?
The workload is basically I'm in Concord 4 to 5 days a week. And it's a 24/7 when it comes to your constituency because you can be called any time of the day or night or weekend or vacation or wherever. And if you're doing your job, which all of the 24 senators that I've worked with in all three sessions do, is that you are available to your constituency. So it's much more time consuming than in the House, much more time consuming than running for the House.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I've found that I liked Senator Booten's analogy of the saucer, but it is about relationships, and it's the collaboration of the 24 of us that really do get things done.
And Senator Kelly, you often hear people talk about calling their congressperson if they need something fixed or something done. We don't typically think about the idea of constituency service, but is that a big part of your job, dealing with calls and emails and things?
It is a very big part of our job, and one that I think is really healthy, I think, for senators because it keeps us very close to the people that we're representing and understanding what some of the bigger issues are. I often think that my constituency constituents call me when they've kind of tried to reach out to many others and haven't been able to get anywhere. And so they call our office. And at that point, there are often our crises as well, and that we can really intervene and be and really be part of the solution for them to move forward.
And what kind of staff does the state provide you with? I'm not sure. I'm not even sure. Do you get a couple people to work with you or an office?
Well, it's different whether you're in the majority or the minority, for sure. But in I was part of the majority the first 4 years, and there was more staff. We each had really another staff person who could work with us, plus other staff at legal counsel, policy person. In the minority, I think we share a lot of the staff, but they're very good, and we do rely on each other. They can do a lot of the research on some of the issues that we do get from constituents, get back to them. I was going to follow up on something that Senator Stiles has said about the workload, in the sense that what makes, I think, I was not ever in the House, but what makes the Senate a little bit different is that because there's only 24 of us and that we do hear every piece of legislation that's brought forward from both the House and the Senate, that we're in committees and in more than we are appointed to more than one committee. Last year I was on four committees the last 2 years. So we also really do get to know each other, because there's five of us on a committee compared to I don't even know how many in the House, at least
22.
So that's, you know, there's that's where I think the workload again, but we get to know each other well. So we spend a lot more time in Concord because we need to be there for committees.
Senator Pearson, you know, when you talk about Congress, these larger national legislative bodies, the party caucus is a very important organizing feature. You know, Democrats have their caucus in each chamber. The Republicans do. Let me ask you, for Democrats and Senator Booten, we can also hear from Republicans. In such a small chamber, is the party caucus sort of meeting with your fellow partisans, is that an important part of the legislative process, or not so much because it's small and informal and you kind of all know each other?
I think it's for me, it's been critical because, you know, because there, as Senator Kelly said, you know, we, the 24 of us, are listening and voting on so many bills. I mean, I think we in this past 2 years went up to 1,600 bills, I believe. You absolutely have to rely on your colleagues who sit on the different committees to understand what the bills are. And of course, when you're within your caucus, you're more likely to share, you know, a political philosophy with them and, you know, their take and their orientation toward a particular bill. And so those caucuses are very informative, very educational, and really help inform how we approach issues.
And Senator Booten, how about the Republican caucus?
Well, I concur with Senator Pierce. I mean, the caucus, the purpose of the caucus is we're all very busy during the course of the week in our own committees, and then there are a dozen other committees. And so you have a calendar in front of you, a number of items you're going to vote on, and you have somebody from each – the chairs from each of the committees explain the bills, why they took the positions they do. And then it opens the floor to the discussion, and I would say probably – 85-90% of the time, we agree with the committee chair's report. And then there are those instances where there's a deeper dive amongst the caucus, and we then may agree to a change to a particular policy, change the direction a bit or change the emphasis, so forth and so on. But it's a great opportunity to do that amongst your colleagues with no pressure. There's no one looking over your shoulder. There's right. You're just having a conversation, and it's like a family discussion.
Now, we've talked about the two caucuses, and obviously Democratic and Republican caucuses are going to have some differences. And Senator Stiles, let me ask you, what have been in your memory some of the more divisive moments in the Senate, moments where you really feel like you were at loggerheads with the other party caucus?
Well, I think that tends to happen in the last part of the second session, to tell you the truth.
And why is that? Just a time?
Well, I'm not sure if it's because elections are coming up or what it is. But probably the most divisive, I would say, is usually deals around the budget, guns. Those are the two probably that are the most death penalty, social issues.
Social issues.
Yeah, and it's not always it's not always, you know, all of those in one party or the other. I mean, it's a mixture sometimes.
Yeah, Senator Kelly, your sense of the kind of some of the more divisive issues from
your
perspective.
Well, I think I don't know if I could use the word divisive. Is probably too strong of a word for me and in our caucuses, but I will say that as Senator Pierce had mentioned, you know, it's critical in moving forward. We're in a democracy, so we have to think together, and we vote, and majority of votes passes legislation. So you want you're looking to your colleagues for support for legislation that's important to you, in particular for legislation that you feel will have a quality impact on your district. So there are times that you may feel more passionate about a particular issue than maybe your colleagues do, and so that will raise some emotion from you because you care so much about who you're representing. And I think other times what's really interesting is that we do sit on so many committees that we do have to trust each other on different legislation. And oftentimes when you've sat through a hearing and you hear a particular piece of legislation and you're sitting with four other senators, then you come to your caucus and all of a sudden you hear that maybe this piece of legislation would have a negative consequence that you didn't hear about. So there's a lot of sharing back and forth to try to get to the right thing and to get support for legislation that we feel would really make a difference.
It doesn't sound like intractable conflict, no. But there is some conflict. And Senator Pearson Boone, I'd like to hear your perspective. Sort of any moments jump out in your mind as sort of divisive moments in your experience? Let's start with you, Senator Pierce.
I think one of the ones that come to mind are, I mean, of course, the ones that come to my mind are the ones that I felt most strongly about, things like raising the minimum wage. You know, the parties are just not on the same page philosophically on that. I think the death penalty, even though the death penalty wasn't a party line vote, we did come to, in the past two terms, we did come to 12-12. Loggerheads. And so there were a lot of Democrats voting to repeal along with some Republicans, but there's also a Democrat voting to keep the death penalty and Republicans voting as well. I think reproductive rights is a big issue for a lot of people, and those have usually come to, again, I think 12-12 ties in the last couple terms. But also gun safety legislation.
Always controversial. Yes, Senator.
Well, I think Senator Pierce has hit probably on some of the top ones, but also includes issues like legalization of marijuana, not medical marijuana, or decriminalization of marijuana is an issue.
Which seems to pass the House quite easily every year, and then right. For some reason it's not happening in the Senate.
Well, we can't help it that they get it wrong. But, you know, that's one issue. But, you know, I also like to just focus on those instances, too, where we get splits within the caucuses, and we did happen in our last session where – there was a split, and we had Democrats and Republicans coming together, voting on, I think it was the bill having to do with the pipeline and,
was the Kinder Morgan pipeline?
I think it was House Bill 1660. So that was just one example of where, you know, sometimes that happens. I mean, we're not monolithic people. We're not sure. Homogeneous to the extent that, you know, we might have, we may have bills that we agree with, but and we co-sponsor. But then when we get into the floor debate, there's differences within the parties.
We need to take a quick break, but lots more of our Senate send-off coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis in for Laura Kanoy. Today on The Exchange, we're talking about highlights from the tenure of four retiring New Hampshire state senators. And we want you to call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. Maybe you have a question for your outgoing state senator. And I have four senators with me today. I have David Booten, who's a Republican senator from Hooksett, David Pierce, is a Democratic senator from Lebanon. Nancy Stiles is a Republican senator from Hampton, and Molly Kelly is a Democratic senator from Keene. And folks, let's talk a little bit about kind of the broader interaction in state government. You obviously have a lot of interaction with the governor and also with the House of Representatives. So let's start with the governor. And it doesn't have to be specifically tailored to the current governor, but just in general, people are often curious about, you know, sort of how much leverage a governor typically has in dealing with the state Senate and sort of how much interaction there is. So let me start with you, Senator Stiles.
Well, I had the opportunity to serve under both Governor Lynch and Governor Hassan, and I will say that both of them have been very friendly to me personally and invited me in, had an open door whenever I wanted to go in and speak with them. So as far as the relationship that I've had with those governors, it's been a very good relationship. And I'm not speaking to the way that they execute their office. I'm just talking about my personal relationship with them. It has always been very positive.
Mm-hmm. Senator Pierce.
Yeah, well, I think, of course, the governor, you know, who has the veto pen has, you know, almost an ultimate say on a lot of legislation. And so it's incumbent upon us in the legislature to ensure that his or her concerns or goals about a particular bill are taken into account, because I don't think it does the legislature any good to spend a lot of time passing a piece of legislation that we know is eventually just going to get vetoed. I think that's, you know, that's not a good use of resources. But then again, you know, if there's something that the legislature feels very strongly about, and you can garner some, you know, supermajorities as on some bills that the governor does not necessarily support. We saw that especially after the 2010 elections. You know, then the legislature does have a say when the governor does veto.
Senator Kelly, your experience working with governors.
My experience, again, I was been in the Senate under Governor Lynch and Governor Hassan, as she was in the Senate with me as well. So I did get to know Governor Hassan quite well. And I would say that one of the biggest roles I think that the governor does play is they are the leader. They provide leadership. It is a state of the state address that sets the tone for the beginning of a legislature session, as well as the beginning. It is the beginning of the budget process when the governor proposes the budget. So there is leadership in the sense of where are we going, what is it we want to attain, what are our goals, and then trying to work together as a legislature to meet some of those goals, or if disagreement, then it would be on the other side. So I certainly have had a good relationship and been able to work closely and agreed for most of, I would say, my 10 years in the Senate with the leadership on the second floor.
So, Senator Booten, let me ask you, as a Republican, you have to work with you have Democratic governors. That budget comes in after the budget address. Sort of describe sort of how you view that in terms of interacting with the governor on priorities.
Well, Dean, your listeners know that in our Constitution, we set up three distinct bodies. We have the House, we have the Senate, and then there's the governor. And unless a bill matures through the process and is embraced by both bodies, and then the governor comes on board and agrees to sign it, you're not going to get a piece of legislation passed. I've worked probably the most closely with the governor's office, both with Governor Lynch, Governor Hassan, in my role as on the Capital Budget Committee, and working to establish priorities and getting certain projects done, like the seawalls down in Hampton Beach, which my good friend Senator Stiles worked so hard to get. But I've always found, whether it's a Democrat or Republican governor, you have to work with them. You have to make your case, and otherwise, because you got to understand that we are, as legislators, are getting a lot of pressure from different stakeholders. Those pressures are magnified by 10 times by the time it gets to the governor's level, and those pressures and the stakeholders pushing it. So having that communication with the governor and explaining why a particular bill, in my case, the governor has – I've had several bill signings with the governor this spring and or early summer, which I'm very pleased to have happen. You have to find the places where you can find agreement and move things along. So.
It's a state Senate roundtable today on the exchange. You can call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Three of you have served in both the House and the state Senate. I'm correct, right? Senator Kelly, you have been in the Senate for 10 years, right?
10 years.
So let me ask the three of you sort of how you – differences that in your experience working in the House versus working in the Senate. And Senator Stiles, let me start with you.
Oh, I think there's a big difference working in the House and in the Senate. When you're working in my opinion anyway, when you're working in the House, you're working with your committee. And that's a group of 22 out of 400. You dive deep into some of the things, but you don't really get the full perspective, I don't think, because everyone in your committee is focused on the same issue. That's why they're on that committee. When you're in the Senate, I think you rely on others, your other senators, but you get that perspective because you serve on multiple committees and you understand where things are coming from and you work a lot closer. You find relationships. I know that one of our senators always says it's all about relationships, and it is exactly about relationships, working with your colleagues to accomplish the goals of the Senate.
Senator Pierce, let me ask you for your thoughts on that.
It's exactly the right answer because in the House, you're only seeing one small part of the overall agenda. You know, unless you're at top leadership and you're a member of a committee, you're dealing with that issue and you develop an expertise on that issue. But in the Senate, because you're serving on multiple committees, you have to develop an expertise on a lot of issues. And a lot of time it's trial by fire on those issues as well. But I think what has impressed me the most and what I found most satisfying was that the ease with which relationships can be built in the Senate, the collegiality, the respect that the senators afford each other.
Senator Booten?
Well, the most difficult time of the session is crossover. And
this is when the one chamber's working on goes to the other chamber.
And when the House bills start coming over to the Senate, it's like a New England blizzard.
It's an avalanche or a blizzard.
And it's a testament to the work effort and ethic of the senators to get that work done. I mean, it's a lot of work. And we spent a lot of time at it in our committee hearings. I worked very closely with Senator Kelly on a background check bill. How many times did that go through different iterations? And that's the key thing. That's the key to being a successful legislator. When you see a legislator that files 30 bills, you know that probably 29 of those bills are going to fail, if not all 30. We in the Senate tend to limit the number of bills we file because to get a bill from the Senate to the House and then maybe bounce back to the Senate and then go to a committee conference and then
sure
finally get onto the governor's nest, that takes a lot of work to follow. And all four of us here know what kind of work effort's required to do that, to follow that bill very closely. And so, you know, this is the mode that we work in the Senate.
I think the sheer volume of legislation in New Hampshire, I think, often surprises people. We have an email from Jim from Walpole, going back to our earlier discussion of constituency service. And Senator Kelly, this one's for you. Jim writes, just to follow up on the earlier discussion of constituent service, Molly Kelly has demonstrated many times her deep caring for her constituents. She truly cares about our lives and prosperity, and that is carried through in her adoption of issues to pursue as our senator. Thank you, Molly, and good luck in whatever comes next. That's from your constituent, Jim, in Walpole.
Very kind. Thank you.
We are having a roundtable discussion today with four New Hampshire state senators who are stepping away from the chamber to do other things. We have Molly Kelly, Democratic senator from Keene, Nancy Stiles, Republican senator from Hampton, David Pierce, Democratic senator from Lebanon, and David Booten, Republican senator from Hooksett. And folks, let's go to the phones. We have Josh calling in from Meredith. Josh, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning. I just wanted to first say thank you to the senators for their service to the state. I did want to comment. I'm quite discouraged about the lack of progress that we've made in the state towards the decriminalization of cannabis compared to other states in New England. I do find it a bit dismaying that we continue to criminalize New Hampshire citizens who choose to consume cannabis. And I'm wondering if some of the senators can comment on the justification for the continuing prohibition and war against citizens of New Hampshire.
Yeah, this is something that I had on my list to ask you about, because as I think David Booten, you alluded to earlier when we were talking, is that the House seems to pass decriminalization, although we haven't talked so much about legalization every year, but it seems to stop in the Senate. So let's see. What's your response to Josh? We can bring others in as well. Yeah, David Booten.
Yeah, good question. This issue has been around for a number of years. It keeps coming back like a bad penny. It's hard for me to understand why we would want as a state policy to promote decriminalization of a drug such as marijuana when we're faced with the opiate crisis that we are faced with today in our country. Manchester is the epicenter of the epidemic, the drug epidemic in the state. I represent part of Manchester, and you know it. I mean, there's so much literature out there that will indicate that marijuana is a gateway drug to other drugs like heroin. And so it's inconscionable to me to think that we want to adopt a policy that would allow for more drugs to be on the streets. And then additionally, I mean, what message do we send our children, our elementary school students and high school students and so forth? What's the message we send to them when we say that, you know, that we're going to allow marijuana to be used whenever you want to use it? I have, I know it's going to keep coming back. Will there be a day when finally they'll get the votes? I hope not, because we have a very serious drug problem in the state of New Hampshire, and we need to continue fighting. And all of us here, sitting here today, all of us were involved in a number of the bills that were filed, the prescription monitoring, the drug education, Senator Stiles did. I was involved in the drug court legislation, which got signed yesterday. If I'm promoting all this legislation and it's getting passed, and then I'm going to walk over to this room and say, okay, now let's allow marijuana, it's an oxymoron.
Josh, thanks for that question. And Senator Stiles and then Senator Kelly, everybody wants to jump in here.
I really would like to say that I worked very hard to get the medical marijuana passed, and I have been open to decrim in the past. Having sat on the task force this past fall, listening to the people that came in to speak with us, many of them said that marijuana is a gateway drug. However, some did say that not everyone that smokes marijuana will become a drug addict. So I think at this particular time, I felt I had to take a step back to just kind of do a pause on the whole movement. Because of the situation that we have and working with all of the drug issues that we have. We need to get that under control first. And then, as Senator Booten said, I think it will come back whether or not we will do decrim. I hope we never do legalization, but I think decrim has some opportunities.
Yeah, and sometimes there's a little confusion. Decriminalization is reducing the penalty for possession of small amounts. Legalization would be like Colorado or Washington State, District of Columbia, where you can smoke.
And Colorado
legal.
Is that's just
that's
at 65.
Goal. 65. Dean, that's their goal. That's what they want to get to.
Here in New Hampshire.
That's their goal. They want
decrim. That's my sense as well. And
decrim
then
is just passing the ball down the field. And now the next step will be a full court press on the legislature to pass legalization. And so from my perspective, the best way to not get to legalization is to not do decrim.
Yes, Senator Kelly.
I just want to say that I think that these debates, we have them over and over again. Sometimes we have a piece of legislation that comes before us that has really good language in it addressing the issues and others that don't. So it's not always just the word decriminalization, but what does the actual bill say? As we've all said here, as senators, we really try to dig into that language. But my point that I'd like to make is that this is a much bigger issue. Yes, we do have a crisis today on the opiate and heroin in all of our communities. I represent a community where we've worked very hard to address the issue, and I think we're making some progress. We have a ways to go. But I think the bottom line, when we have these discussions, we have to make a decision how we're addressing this on a big picture. We cannot arrest our way out of this problem or out of this epidemic. And I think that that's the larger question here, that it is a health issue and we have to address it as a state. So I think we can go back and forth and pick away some of these pieces of legislation. But the bottom line is, how are we addressing this? We cannot arrest our way out. A lot of these questions are really dealing with what are the consequences for young people in regard to our criminal statutes.
And Senator Pierce, I'm interested in your thoughts as well. But just to throw in another issue in the mix of issues that seem to come up over and over again, also, are we ever going to have a casino in New Hampshire?
Well, that's that issue does come up, seems to come up every session, not just every term. For instance, I mean, in my district, District 5 in the Upper Valley, the overwhelming sentiment of which I'm aware is against having a casino in New Hampshire, in that it changes. We believe that changes would change the character of the state, and we're looking for responsible approaches to our state budget. And I think that it's passed the Senate. In fact, I think in 2013 or 2014 it passed 2-1 in the Senate, and it lost in the House. It always loses in the House, and I think at one point in the last 4 years it lost in the House by one vote, I believe. Yeah. So will we get there? I think, it just depends on the makeup of the legislature.
Anybody else want to jump in on casinos?
Well, I would just say
Senator Stiles.
I was going to say I've always supported one casino in our state. My district is really split. The northern part of it definitely does not want it. The southern part does. But I see it as a potential to alleviate some of the issues that we have.
Yeah. Senator Booten.
Well, I think and I've supported casino gambling, and I think this session, its defeat, and now with the sale of Rockingham Park, if I had to look into a crystal ball, I'd say we're probably not going to see the casino gambling issue for some time.
We may get a little bit of a break from it. Speaking of breaks, we need to take one more short break. But coming up, much more on our Senate send-off. We'll talk about achievements and disappointments and also a little bit about the electoral season that is upon us. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis, in for Laura Kanoy. Today, an exit interview of sorts with four of the eight New Hampshire senators retiring this year from the state Senate. You can call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. I have four senators in studio with me. David Pierce, he's a Democratic senator from Lebanon. Nancy Stiles, she's a Republican senator from Hampton. Wisconsin, Molly Kelly, Democratic senator from Keene, and David Booten, Republican senator from Hooksett. And folks, we've talked a little bit about the chamber. We've talked a bit about some of the key issues that keep coming back. Let me turn to each of you now. We'll just go around the table and find out kind of your sort of biggest achievement or high, and then your sort of biggest sort of disappointment or low in your experience. And I'll start with you, Senator Pierce.
Well, I think for me personally, probably I'm looking back into my House days, actually, not necessarily just in the Senate, but in my 10 years in the legislature. For me, probably the highest point and what I see as my accomplishment, of which I'm most proud, is getting the marriage equality bill passed in 2009. New Hampshire was the first state to do marriage equality without a court telling us we had to do it. And we did it legislatively. And I was very proud of that. And as we see now, they've done a state-by-state survey. The Pew Research Center has done a state-by-state survey. And New Hampshire is actually number one in its approval of marriage equality. And I'm also very proud of that. I think that New Hampshire's libertarian streak and conventional wisdom of let people live their own lives is really what's contributing to that.
Senator Booten?
Well, let me start with my biggest disappointment. And my biggest disappointment has been the work that I've done over the last few years. And even more recently, I chaired a commission on the Sununu Center. And the Sununu Center is
– for our listeners, this is the –
this is the juvenile detention center, facility. Yeah. It's a facility that's half empty, costs the state $10 million a year. The commission report we came up with had what I thought was a outside-the-box creative solution. And unfortunately, it was defeated in Senate Finance. I've been assured by remaining members of the Senate who, if elected, that they will take up this issue next year. It's something that we really need to do. My biggest achievement are the bills. And I spent the past year chairing the Commission on Child Fatalities and Abuse. And the bills that I think many of these senators that are with me today co-sponsored these bills, three bills in particular that have tweaked the Child Protection Act law to provide more protection for our young children, the most vulnerable. All of this work came out of was the genesis of it was the Brielle Gage murder in Nashua. And so three of those bills were signed into law by the governor the other day. One bill didn't make it. It passed the Senate, the one having to do with retention of records. It was defeated in the House. I'm hoping that someone in the Senate will bring that. I know the commission, someone in the commission will bring it forward again next year. But the other important thing is that we extended the life of the commission for another year. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. And so that, for me, is something that I find a lot of reward and can at least put my head down the pillow at night knowing that I've done something to help protect young children in the state of New Hampshire.
Senator Stiles.
Thank you. There are several pieces of legislation that I'm proud to have championed or worked with, and that is in the area of education and in the area of health. However, probably the ones I'm most pleased with are the ones that I've done for to meet the specific needs of my community and bringing some money back to those communities to take care of some of the issues that they had. My biggest disappointment, I'd been working for 10 years to try to get the legislature to take another look at the distribution of the meals and rooms tax.
Oh, interesting.
It hasn't been touched since 1960, so I thought we could at least have a discussion. I think I'm hopeful that that will continue. But most recently, the biggest disappointment I had was I sit on the State Parks Advisory Committee, and our state parks are self-funded. So that means whatever the fee to go get in is, it maintains all of our parks. And just recently, I've had on a second try to look at our seniors in skiing in the North Country. We charge our children $2 to get into our state parks. And yet we have a group of seniors, very vocal seniors, that do not want to pay anything to ski at Cannon. And I think that
you ski free during the
week. Free during the week. And I thought we came up with several different compromises that would meet the bill where they could at least address that they were contributing to and to the maintenance of our state parks. So I look forward to someone else picking up that banner and moving that forward next year, because our parks are self-funded, and I think everyone needs to contribute.
Senator Kelly.
Yes, thank you, Dean. And, you know, I think you're hearing from so many of the senators here in 10 years and try to put something together to say what is one thing or two things that we're really proud of, because everything is connected and we kind of move through these 10 years. And I have to say, I entered the Senate with the purpose of making sure and working hard that all of our young people and our students would have an equal opportunity to a quality education. And that is where I have put a lot of my energy and time. And I'm proud of much of the legislation that we have been able to pass. We've been through tough times during a recession. We were able to move forward with adequacy funding. When I first entered the Senate, that was probably the discussion that was going on with most force. We were able to come together. Obviously, I think there has not been enough funding, but we've been able to resolve some of those issues and to move forward. And hopefully we'll continue to do that. Also, we passed legislation in education with school safety and a piece of legislation on school lunch policy. And I'll continue to work hard with that. And I have to say that Senator Stiles and I have worked together on this committee for a long time, and it's been an honor and a privilege to work with her to achieve a lot of these. It's also my disappointment. We are not funding higher education. You know, we're the 50th in the nation for our funding for higher education. One of the biggest crises that we face today is a lack of workforce, and without an investment in our young people in higher education, we will not have the workforce that New Hampshire needs.
High student debt load, too, I think,
yes,
second highest.
Second highest. And we also will not have our young people staying here in our state. And we cannot grow an economy without an educated workforce, and we know that. So at the same time, it's a positive, but it's also there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm disappointed that we couldn't get further.
It's a roundtable discussion with four New Hampshire state senators today. You can join the conversation, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR, email exchange at nhpr.org. Folks, we've received a couple of emails during the show. Scott from Jackson, in getting back to our earlier discussion on marijuana, writes in, what kind of message do you send when alcohol is legal despite being more dangerous, addictive, and destructive by far than marijuana? We often hear that from people who support legalization. Ken from Concord writes in with an interesting kind of process question. He says, how is it that the culture in the Senate is that unlike the House, where senators wear no name tags or identifying information? I appreciate the collegiality, but for the public, it's hard to recognize who is who. Now, just as a practical question, do you all not have any nameplates or name tags when you're in the chamber?
We have nameplates.
You have plates, but you don't have – yeah. Okay.
And into the committee rooms. I think what this person's referring to is the badge here on your
coat. Oh, okay. I never
wore mine, but I always found that everybody seemed to know who I was, even if I didn't know who they were. So I'm not sure that's a big problem.
So in the House, you normally have a badge with a name tag on it?
Right.
Okay. Interesting. We have a little bit of time left, and I want to turn our attention to politics. You all are not having to run for reelection, and I'm sure that will be a nice break from the rigors of that process. But I'm interested to get we have two Democrats and two Republicans, to get your opinions of kind of the shape of your party in the state, kind of going into the fall elections, and also if you're willing to offer them your thoughts about the presumptive nominees in each party. And we'll just go around the table and start with you, Senator Pierce.
Well, I think we Democrats are pretty hopeful about 2016. excuse me. I think the the ideas. We had a very strong and very competitive and sometimes contentious presidential primary between two very strong and outspoken candidates. But I think ultimately that was good for the process, and it brought out a lot of good ideas. It also, especially on Senator Sanders' side, it brought out a lot of young people, a lot of enthusiasm. And so I'm feeling very hopeful about that. And I think what we're seeing at the presidential level on the Republican side has a lot of both Democrats and Republicans very anxious about the possibility of a Trump presidency. We've seen some of the remarks in light of the Orlando shootings that have been particularly erratic. And I think that we're hoping that, you know, cooler heads prevail and that, you know, we can have some successes this year.
Senator Booten?
I find this a difficult election cycle, I think, as well as many other people do. I don't think that many of us are very happy with who the presumptive nominees are on either side, and I include myself in that. But talking on a wider scale, of electoral scale here in New Hampshire, presidential elections are always a very tough cycle for Republicans here in New Hampshire. And I see that probably will be the case as usual during this. You know, I remember going back several years ago, a number of years ago, in a presidential cycle, and I lost my House seat by 5 votes. So there's a lot of volatility in the voting public right now, and so people are not going to spend much time paying attention during the summer, but you know, come after Labor Day, they're going to be focusing in pretty closely on what's being said and what's being done. So,
Senator Stiles.
Well, thank you. I think the Republican candidates this year, they had a very deep field. And obviously, my endorsements didn't help a couple of them. So I think that Mr. Trump surfaced because people were angry. They were angry at what was not going on in the Congress. My hope for the vote coming up in the fall would be that people would vote all the way down the ballot. I know that I had the opportunity to do a review on one of the communities after the last election, and I was amazed at the number of ballots that I saw that just had the presidential checkoff. No one else, they didn't vote down the ballot. And I think that putting people into the House and the Senate and the governor's office and the executive council are equally as important. So I'm hoping that people will take the time to go out and vote and to vote down the ballot.
Senator Kelly.
Yes. And I would have to agree with Senator Stiles that we need to focus as well on the state elections as we move forward on the presidential. They're so very important. And as Senator Pierce said, I, too, am very hopeful of the Democrats will be in the majority in the Senate. I think there are some excellent people running. Obviously, the two of us are not. I'm going to work hard to keep a Democrat in my district, no question about that. And also, just to say that on the presidential, I have been a supporter of Hillary Clinton from the beginning. I'm very, very excited about the fact that she is the first woman made history and presumptive majority party to go to the convention, and I'm very hopeful and will work very hard to for her to be successful. And part of that reason is because of the issues that she has stood for her entire life are the most passionate issues I have and why I ran for the Senate. So, again, I'm very energized and hopeful about the future and where we're going. We have some very, very difficult issues to deal with. We are just coming off from the historic awful, devastating, horrific mass shooting. And there are many, many issues involved with that solution. We know that there's violence, there's hatred. Mental health is another issue that we talk about and never been able to address to fund adequately. And then we have the issue of safety, and I don't think that it is an argument about the Second Amendment. It is truly about safety and how we can make sure that people can be free and gather in our country and be safe.
We had a Facebook comment from Brian, and I'll throw this out to whoever wants to take it. It says, the public's distrust of politicians continues to rise as the National Congress approval rating has dropped to 9%. Is this a concern on the state level, and what will you do to regain trust? Now, obviously, you all are stepping away, so it's not going to be incumbent on you specifically, but just kind of your sense of trust in New Hampshire versus kind of the national institution. Anybody want to jump in? We only have a few.
I'll jump in for just a second. Yeah. I think in New Hampshire, you have an advantage because you have 400 representatives, so you can get in touch with your representative, and you can also get in touch with your senator. The thing I am very proud of in New Hampshire is that, having visited other states, in New Hampshire, any bill that comes forward goes through the hearing process and goes through a vote on the floor. So the citizens in this state have the opportunity to share some of their concerns if they get one of their representatives to put that bill forward.
Yeah, Senator Kelly.
I just wanted to agree with that and say that it is the process of democracy that we celebrate and respect every day when we walk into the Senate, and that's what we trust.
Well, we are unfortunately out of time. I wish all of you good luck in whatever comes next. Senator Pierce, Senator Booten, Senator Stiles, and Senator Kelly, thank you all so much for coming in today. This has been a really enjoyable discussion, and it'll be a little bit of change of pace from you watching the fall election, not necessarily from the sidelines, but from a different perspective. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jessica Hunt. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our interns are Ares Havan and Sam Ruthier. Our music is composed by Bob Lord. I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Laura Kanoy. And I just want to remind listeners that the conversation always continues on Facebook and at nhpr.org.